Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Well, the music behind me right now is from the artist we're talking to today. And many of you have written and asked, who is that playing that music? And for people who aren't followers of gospel music, they think, what is that, ragtime? What is that, a saloon piano? What is that exactly? It's what's called convention-style music, and it's from a particular project that Stan Whitmire recorded called Old Time Gospel Piano. And Stan joins us right now. Stan, it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, Daniel, good to talk to you, too. That I think that's my first Christian project that I recorded probably about 14 years ago now. Can't believe it's been that long.
No kidding. Well, that would be the first solo thing, right?
Right. I mean, I had a Christmas CD that had mixed types of seasonal songs on it and Christmas carols on it, I think was the first recording that Spring Hill released of mine, I think in 1994. And then right after that, I think the first solo project I recorded after that was Old Time Gospel.
Yeah. Well, let's go back, because I think that's a good place to start, really. The Old Time Gospel sound. Did you grow up listening to that kind of music?
Absolutely. I mean, that I think defines me, that it's inside me. I can't get it out of me. I don't want to get it out of me. That's what the very first gospel music I ever heard, probably, well, definitely before I was even born, was that kind of music, because I grew up in the North Georgia area where the singing conventions were very popular. There's still some going on today, not quite as many as there were when I was growing up, but my mom and dad were very into that and carried me to those. And even both of my grandfathers, which I think this is interesting, both of my grandfathers were singing school teachers, where they taught the shape note form of music, which all of those old convention songs were written in shape notes.
Yeah.
So
what expertise did they bring?
I probably just passed down from generation to generation. I mean, my grandparents and my parents had no formal training in music. They just enjoyed it a lot and loved gospel music. And I guess my grandfather's grandparents, that's the only kind of music that they knew. Yeah. Would be the convention style of music, the fa sol la, the shape note. And then, you know, my mother and father also knew the shape notes. I guess their parents taught them that, and then the type of Christian music just started evolving and changing through the years, and it, you know, became traditional hymns, which were not necessarily shape notes, you know, hymns like Blessed Assurance and Amazing Grace, It Is Well With My Soul, and then, you know, evolved more into what we know as just traditional Southern gospel music now, which some of the groups still, like Greater Vision, still know their shape notes and love to keep that type of music in the forefront. But there's a lot of other kinds of Christian music now.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a fine line, kind of what you said, that your grandparents didn't have, or your grandfathers didn't have maybe any formal training. And I think, you know, you hear people talk about shape notes being kind of the, the uneducated man's way of learning to sing, because you could just go by shape and not necessarily notes on a staff. However, you talk to somebody
it's just a different way of learning.
Exactly. Well, but that's the thing. You talk to Ben Spear, and he is very quick to point out that you need to have an education in the rudiments of music, and shape note does that, just in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact same thing. You can transpose, you know, if you know your shapes, then you can look at a piece of music that's written in shape notes, and theoretically you can play it in any key, or you can sing it in any key, because, you know, you have the same number of shapes corresponding to the same number of notes in the musical scale, and then also it would correspond to what we now know as the Nashville number system.
Yeah.
It's just, instead of shapes, the Nashville people do it by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
So it's the exact same thing, just a different language, really.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I bet it is kind of a distant cousin to that Nashville number system. Hey, let's listen to the Old Time Gospel Piano. Now, here's Stan Whitmire. keyboard artistry of Stan Whitmire, and he's our guest today on Daniel Britton Friends. Does your mom play?
If you asked her, she would say no, but yes, she does. But it was, again, not, I mean, when I say not formal training, I guess I'm always making reference to like classical music,
right?
That type of piano lessons. She didn't have any of that, but her father, my grandfather, loved gospel music and the singing school, singing convention type of music. So he taught her how to read the shape notes and how to play piano. She used to tell me she could play anything in the key of D, and I don't know why that is. I think it's because that's the key that he probably taught her first to play in. But so she can play, but no formal piano lessons.
Well, your lessons early in life came from a lady with the last name of Phillips. Eloise, is that right?
Eloise Phillips, yes. I think she's the best piano teacher I know of, and that means encompassing all different types of music. The thing that I am so thankful for today, which only age gives you that perspective where you can look back and, you know, when it's happening, you don't know to be grateful for it.
Right.
But all these many years later, I just think it's so great how, in God's plan, the only lady that taught me, the only person that taught me for 15 years, from the time I was 4 years old until I was 19 in college, and I just didn't have time to practice anymore. That's really why I stopped taking piano lessons. You never quit learning. But I just thought how great it is that one person, she emphasized classical music. She was a Christian lady, and she played in her church in Roswell, Georgia. So I got traditional hymn arrangements. She also grew up in the South and wrote some convention songs, which I think she still does today. So I got that style. And then popular music of the day in the 70s was completely different from pop music today. But every lesson would have something from every genre of music. I studied my scales, my arpeggios, the Hannon finger exercises, which I hated at the time, and could not see how that had anything to do. You know, you want to play a song, and they seemed meaningless at the time. But I'm so thankful today that I did those, and I think it just helps with clarity and precision for all different kinds of music.
Hmm. So, what decade were you born in?
What decade?
That's a polite way of asking.
We can just say, yeah.
Okay.
How old are you, Stan?
Yes.
1963.
Some people get really defensive when you ask that, so you have to be careful.
I've learned to embrace it. I mean, you can't deny it. People that have known me my whole life, they can add it up.
But yeah, right.
I'm much, much younger than Gerald Wolfe. So just let me go on record as saying that.
Yeah.
Gerald Wolfe was born in April of 63, and I was born May of 63, so there you go.
Okay, so in the 60s, at this point, I mean, when I think of convention style, like really early on, I mean, I think it goes back to the 1800s, and I watched a public broadcasting special, which even connected its roots to maybe Irish music, some of the Irish influences, and I can hear that. But probably early 1900s is what I would typically think of with conventions. And I know they were going through the 20s and probably 30s. Now, into the 60s, you probably had a pretty good Southern gospel circuit that was out there doing more of what we know of as Southern gospel and concerts, all-night sings, things like that. Introduce that into your life as a kid. Did you go to those things?
Actually, not that many. I my experience of them would have been more from TV, like the Gospel Singing Jubilee program was on every Sunday morning in our house, and we had plenty of the albums. Mm-hmm. That dates me. Records, 33 and a third long-playing albums.
Yeah.
The Happy Goodman family and the Spear family and the Blackwood brothers, folks like that. So I don't remember that many concerts. My dad was involved a lot in the church, in the music in the church where we were going at the time. He was a song leader. That's what I always say in my concerts. It wasn't some fancy name like minister of music or director of music and arts or anything like that. It was the song leader in our little Baptist church at the time. And that's almost, you know, every living, waking, breathing hour that was extra was spent there at the church, and I was a kid running underneath the pews and probably driving people crazy at the time while Dad was having choir practice. But I guess I grew up more from a church music perspective than I did from, you know, gospel concerts. But yeah. we certainly had the albums in our house where I listened to it, and that's actually where I learned to improvise so much. Is and I didn't know I was doing this at the time. What I was training my ear as I was learning to read music. I loved that gospel sound, and I would put records on my mom and dad's record player of the Spear family. A lot of times with Larry Goss playing piano, who he's my greatest mentor, I think, of the type person yeah. and the type piano player that I want to be. But I would put the records on the record player, and I'd run over to the piano and play along with it.
Yeah.
And if there was something I didn't get right, you'd have to get up, go move the needle back, you know, you yeah. go again. And so I would train my ear and try to imitate and play those sounds that I heard. And it's so great that now oftentimes, especially if I'm around the Gaither crowd, Bill Gaither, a lot of times we'll record tracks in the studio, you know, before we go record the videos. And
right.
now that's a part of my job is to play along with pre-recorded music and add the live aspect. So I was doing that way before I knew what I'd be doing, you know, 30, 40 years later.
Well, and that brings up a question. A lot of people, especially a lot of musicians or a lot of pianists right now listening, want to know, did you, and we can go back and probably know the answer already, but it sounds like you started out learning to read music and had to learn to play by ear. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yes. I'm not one of those. I remember Anthony Berger would tell stories, and let me just say, we miss him so much. He was an incredible talent, and it was just such a shock when he went on to heaven. But I remember him. I think his story was different. Maybe he climbed on the piano bench and started playing before he actually took lessons.
Right.
My path was a little different. My mom and dad had a love for gospel music, and they hoped that God would give me that gift or had given me that gift. And they started me taking piano lessons when I was four. And I just had the, you know, traditional piano lessons where you learn to read from music. And then that's what I was saying by just all types of music being around me, all different types of music in the house, because at the time my mom loved old jazz music. Like, I would hear Nat King Cole albums or Ella Fitzgerald, and the school I was going to, I was being exposed to all different kinds of music, and having to learn to accompany at my church and at my school. It was just such a wonderful mix that was being poured into me, which only God knew what I'd be doing 30, 40 years later, and how that's very necessary all today. So I don't remember taking lessons that we will now learn how to improvise. Mm-hmm. You just, that's where a lot of those finger exercises and the scales and the arpeggios, which were so boring at the time, you learned them in every key. I remember learning all these different chords in every key. You had major seventh chords and dominant seventh chords and diminished chords, all those kind of things. You had to learn them in every key. Then when you start playing hymns, I remember my teacher would say, okay, now let's substitute this chord. And so your ear just starts, you know, all the possible chord substitutions that you might could do on that chord as you learn. You know, you take more lessons, and you just keep training your ear by listening. That's, people come up to me and say, how do you train your ear? And I say, just keep listening to all different kinds of music that you like and try to play along with it. And I think you train your ear that way as you're learning how to read. I think both are very important.
Yeah.
Knowing how to read and then knowing how to play by ear are very important.
Thank you. Stand with Byron, the old-time gospel piano project. Boy, that is classic. Classy sound. Stan's our guest today on Daniel, Brit, and Friends. Okay, where does the part of, and again, what you just said there, I want to keep that in mind. It's very important to learn how to read music, and we're not knocking that. So all the kids listening right now who want an excuse not to take piano lessons, you ain't going to find it here.
But no, absolutely not.
Keeping that in mind and going to the improvisation, the playing by ear type, do you ever get the compliment that people say, man, you just have such a freeing way, you're so creative and relaxed, as opposed to someone who, and you can tell the person who plays exactly what's written on the page and it's kind of rigid and there's no personality to the song?
I've never been accused of doing that too much. I always got in trouble for trying to improvise on classical music.
Exactly.
Which I never really understood why it was okay to add chords and add runs into some kinds of music, and then I'd get my hand slapped. No, you don't add in a scale with Bach,
yeah,
or Beethoven.
Right.
But my main thinking is there's many times if you're going to be thrust, if you're going to be put in a situation to accompany someone, sometimes people will, all you'll have is they'll hand you a piece of music and say, I need it to be just like this. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to a recording of it, you don't know what it sounds like. You
yeah,
just have the music. That's the only place I would say it would be limited, that you can't read music. But then in other instances, many times people don't have the music available, so all I have is the CD of this song, and I need it to sound like this. So then you have to pull on those other skills, rely on those other skills of your ear.
Hear the bells ringing, they're singing.
Stan Whitmire on piano with the Martins from his project Songs of the Resurrection. Stan Whitmire is our guest today on Daniel, Brit, and Friends. Well, Okay, so you're growing up, you're learning all this, your world is expanding on the keyboard there, and I guess you continue through your teenage years. At what point, living in Georgia, this is a natural tie-in to go to join the group, the Neelands. Was there anything significant before you joined the Neelands?
As far as joining them, or
in your playing. Your piano career?
All of my experience up until that point had been at church or at school. I had played for my high school. There was a smaller group called the Ensemble that was taken out of the chorale. There was about 16 singers, and supposedly it was the 16 best singers out of the chorale. It was an audition group, and every year they took a trip to Europe or New York or somewhere. That was my first travel experience, was as a sophomore, actually a junior at my high school in Atlanta, working with Frank Boggs. I don't know how many people there would remember that name. Frank Boggs actually was the first recording artist for Word Records,
yep,
which is a big Christian recording company still to this day. Word Records used to be based in Waco, Texas, and Frank Boggs, this deep baritone voice, resonant voice, he was the first soloist, and he was my chorale teacher in high school in Atlanta, and so I traveled with him in the Ensemble, and learning how to follow his direction. That's another thing, is being able to watch. If you're accompanying, it's so totally different than if you're playing a piano solo, because you have to do what they're doing. Frank Boggs was one of the best directors out there. And at the same time, I was beginning to play at my home church in Atlanta, Mount Perrin Church of God, where I still am today. I played piano there, it's hard to believe, but for over 30 years now, I've played piano there on Sundays when I've been in town. And that was all my experience up until the time I met Rex Neelan. And it was the singing conventions. On Sunday afternoons, after I had been at church, a lot of times in the summertime, my mom and dad and I would go to the singing conventions where you would hear that convention style of music. And so it was that was a totally different style. Someone would get up and direct a song, and they would choose, who they wanted to play the song. They'd say, "Stan, come up here and play this." Now, you'd never seen the song before, because the convention books were new. About twice a year, they would come out with new song books. So it was a great exercise in sight reading, and a totally different style of music than what I would play at high school or what I would play at my church on Sunday mornings. So fast forward to the National Quartet Convention, 1985, in Nashville, Tennessee. I drove up from Atlanta, and I had just walked in the door of the Municipal Auditorium. I remember the building. I just walked in the front door and happened to run into Rosanelle Spear, Powell, and she saw me and she said, "You've got to come down here. You need to meet Rex Neelan," which it was kind of ironic. Rex Neelan lived in Atlanta, and I had never met him in Atlanta, but I had to go to Nashville. She took me downstairs, introduced me to Rex. They were looking for a new piano player. And after Quartet Convention that year, I came back home the next week, I believe, when the Neelans got back in town, and auditioned for Rex and for Kelly, and I guess all the members of the group were there then, and started traveling with them December of 1985. That was my first traveling experience. Just absolutely wonderful. I love Rex Neelan and really miss him.
Now, you were playing for your church at this time?
I was. It was a hard thing to tell them. I'm basically going to be gone all the time, because in those days, the Neelans traveled about, including travel days, about 300 days a year.
Wow.
So I was gone for a solid year, and then my church, I think they knew how to try to lure me back. They offered me a full-time job at the church, which I'd never had that. It was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. So my first time on the road, I was only with the Neelans for a year, and then I went back and worked on full-time music staff at my church in Atlanta at Mount Perrin, 87 until 91. And then through an interesting series of events, I ended up being back with the Neelands again. There was a period of time where Kelly Neeland Thompson was doing some solo work, and I traveled with her for a little bit. And then it ended up that we got back with the Neelands, and so I was with them 92, 93, 94, 95. So I left the Neelands. It was a very difficult decision. February of 96, I left the Neelands just because there were too many other opportunities. I love variety, and I love playing for a lot of different things. I was getting some opportunities to go play different places, as a part of... It's turned out to be Billy Graham crusade work, Billy Graham Evangelistic Association conference work, and my church certainly missed me, and I just decided it was time to spread my wings, and it took a lot of faith, really, and I've never looked back, though. I'm so grateful that I didn't regret that decision. It was hard, but I've been able to still work with lots of different gospel artists. After I left the Neelands, Gerald Wolfe has been a great friend of mine since the days, the first days that I joined the Neelands. So yeah. I've worked some with him as a soloist and some with Greater Vision. And then through a lot of the Templeton tours, Christian cruises, I first met Mike Speck when I was with the Neelands years ago. So a lot of the connections I made with the Neelands, I didn't know were going to be connections. I certainly didn't meet them for that to happen, but you know, God just keeps leading and directing, and keeps His hand on you if you put Him first, and I try to do that every day, and He just keeps leading, and I try to hear His voice and keep following.
Well, business people may be listening and be interested in the whole networking aspect. And this day and age, of course, with Facebook and all these other internet ways of networking, it makes the world smaller. But in those days, when you were, especially like the Billy Graham opportunities, that's not a small thing. How do you remember in particular how the Billy Graham folks came across you?
I've often said the greatest opportunities have come to me just seemingly falling out of the sky, which we know that doesn't happen. All those that love the Lord and trust the Lord and put Him first, I believe those doors are put in front of us, and that was certainly one of those opportunities. It's nothing I auditioned for, but at the time, Billy Graham's senior associate evangelist was named Ralph Bell. Ralph Bell is still living. He's just retired now, but he would do crusades in smaller cities than like a Billy Graham crusade would be. Mm-hmm. And he was looking, or the Billy Graham Association was looking to put together a music team to travel and do Ralph Bell crusades. And there were about, I guess, 10 of them a year, something like that. And it was just someone told someone about me. And I remember that the whole group was put together. Some were from Nashville, some were studio musicians. And then I ministered music at church, also as a great singer, and he was one that was also mentioned. And so we all met together, actually, at our church. That was, I think, the year after I left the Neelands. Because that's what was just so amazing to me. I was scared to leave because I thought I'm going to be out on the street with a sign that says, "We'll work for food."
Yeah.
And I kind of made a list of all the people that I was going to call and say, "Okay, I'm not traveling all the time. Hopefully, you know, you can use me and do something with me." And I never had to call those people. That's just what was amazing. And sometime later in the year in 96 is when that opportunity came open. And from starting in 1997 and going for like the next 4 or 5 years, I was gone about 10 weeks out of the year doing these Ralph Bell crusades. And then through that, I met some folks, you know, at the Billy Graham Association that our music team actually did two Billy Graham crusades, which those are just, I consider them once-in-a-lifetime experiences. I'll never forget those, where you're in the big domed arenas with 70,000 people. Mm-hmm. It was just an awesome opportunity. And to this day, I still do some work, make conference work, maybe some senior adult conferences. Some of them at the Cove there in Asheville, North Carolina, the Billy Graham Training Center. It's just a beautiful place. And that's a connection, you know, which I hate using that word, because I always tell people, don't ever take a job with the goal of, well, maybe I'll meet someone and then I can get to do what I really want to do. You know, I don't believe that's the way God wants to work, and I don't believe that's the way He wants to bless us. We need to be happy where we are, and God's big enough. Believe me, He can bring the people to you. You don't have to go out looking for the opportunity. Just bloom where you're planted. That's the big thing I tell young people. Just play. If you're a piano player, play every chance you get to play at church. Don't despise small beginnings. If you're in a small church in a small town, play where you are and do it to the best of your ability, because you're really doing it for God. Ultimately, God is your audience. And just see it as, if that is truly your desire, He'll bring the people. You never know who's in that audience that's listening to you and what connections. Let Him make the connections. You don't have to be out there doing it. So at least that's the way it's worked with my life.
Going back, thinking about convention-style music, because we are kind of at this point where you've been with the Neelands and done some work with them and traveled, and knowing that Rex was a lover of convention-style music and coming...
Yes.
And people know the history of the Lefevers that became the Rex Neeland Singers, that became the Neelands, and all of that. We've talked about that on this show. And we've just buried Eva May just this year, as a matter of fact. And I think you actually went to church together, right, at Mount Perry?
Yes. Yes. She knew of me, or she knew me as a small child at the church before I ever met her.
Yeah.
But I really will miss her. That was a lady who loved life and loved the Lord and loved me. I end up breaking down when I start talking about her, because she was just the greatest cheerleader for me and for someone, especially in their teens and 20s, to see someone of her stature that didn't have to pay attention to me. You know, that's where I think we all have to be careful of who's looking up to us and who is younger and around us that we need to encourage. You don't realize what an effect complimenting a young person, encouraging them, just spending time with them, and then vice versa, you don't, a harsh word, you know, maybe that's the only opportunity that person's ever going to get to meet you. And if their only experience with you is that you were rude, then they go away thinking that you were, you know, not a good person. So Eva May was just, first of all, I don't know of anyone that played that style of piano any better than her back in the day in the 40s and 50s and 60s. They played some clips of the old Lefevers, the Lefever Trio, and then the Lefevers. They played some video clips at her memorial service. That, I mean, man, she was just at the top of her game. She could play and MC and sing all at the same time, and looking at the camera and not looking at her hands, and fingers were just flying.
Wow.
So she was just a great friend, and it's just the passing of an era. I hate that all that generation is going, but... She was 91, so we can't keep them forever. I wish we could. But.
Yeah. Well, Mark Lowry refers to her during some of the shows you've done with Mark when you step up to play a convention-style tune, and he calls it the windshield wiper style.
You know, Mark, I think he named it that. That's definitely, you won't find that in the dictionary. But
right.
That's because both hands are going opposite directions oftentimes, so that's where he got that, I think.
But, yeah,
he loved Eva May, too. Just such a joyful person, and I'm glad she was in a assisted living and hospital kind of off and on for the last 10 months before she passed, and I'm just so glad that I was able to go by and spend some time with her, because she would always, even in her painful situation, she was very uncomfortable, yet she would always find some nugget. I would walk away and think, wow, I hope I remember that, what she said, because she would laugh all the time, you know, that trademark laugh that was very infectious and would get everybody laughing with her. Yet she was very, very deep in her faith, and she definitely did what she did because she loved the Lord. And one of the last things I'll ever remember that she said to me, and this was only about 3 weeks before she passed away, I don't know where this came from. She just looked at me and she said, "Don't ever work for money. Don't ever work, you know, don't ever work for the dollar, where the dollar is your motivation."
Right.
And I just thought, wow, to, you know, that's something that we all have to keep in mind. Yeah, we have to pay the bills. I can't play for free, but the motivation definitely should be serving the Lord and serving others. So,
well, in the mid '90s, when you left, well, '96, you left the Neelands. And at this point, the Gaither Homecoming series was in full swing, and I know you did work with Bill on those videos, and maybe even in some traveling, and also Greater Vision picked you up probably at some point not long after then. You want to talk about those two things, Homecoming and Greater Vision, in your career?
That was just another one of those things that, you know, God found me where I was, and I my first experiences being in the studio with the Gaithers were when I was still with the Neelands. And I remember the first time I ever played on one of the Gaither videos. I think it was the very first Christmas video that they put together, and then it was just videos. It was before DVDs, but it was called a Christmas Homecoming. And at that time, he pointed at me and he said, "Oh, you're that piano player from Atlanta." So I've gone from being that piano player in Atlanta to having a name now. Even after I left the Neelands, that's one thing I was thankful. The connection remained, and he has been so good and so kind. And there's another encourager for you, that, like Eva May, he has kept using me and so complimentary and helpful. And Greater Vision, I just think this is such a neat connection. I remember the first time I met Gerald Wolfe, first time I'd ever heard of him, was at a quartet convention in Nashville, when it was still in Nashville, in 86, when I was playing for the Neelands at the time. And Gerald came around and introduced himself to me, and this is when he was still with the Dumplin Valley Boys, a little trio he was traveling with in the East Tennessee area. So that's the first time I met him. Then after quartet convention that year, that was in 86. I had already given my notice to the Neelands because my church had asked me to come work for them full time. So right after that, Roger Bennett, this is how all the connections, it's like a big chessboard, and God's moving the pieces around different places. Roger Bennett, who was also such a great friend of mine, and I can't believe that he's now gone on. It seems like it's a very dangerous profession to be a gospel piano player. I'm having having to be really careful these days.
Oh, yeah.
But Roger Bennett was leaving the Cathedrals in 1986. He had a few years there where he did some record company work. So Glenn Payne calls me after quartet convention 1986, and he knew I was leaving the Neelands, and he asked if I would consider coming with the Cathedrals. Well, I always try to live by my word, and I had already told my church I was going to come work for them. And the main thing is, I had given my word to the Neelands. I was leaving them to go work at my church, and I didn't think that would be the right thing to do, to say, "Oh, well, now I'm going to go with the Cathedrals." So I was so flattered that Glenn Payne would think enough of me to ask me that, but I said, "I just really can't. The timing's just not right." So a lot of times, you know, if that had happened several months before, who knows what would have happened.
Wow.
But because of that, Gerald Wolfe, someone referred Gerald, and Glenn Payne asked him to play for the Cathedrals, and you know what's happened since then. So it's all, you know, what we do really does have a bearing on what happens in other people's lives, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Stan Whitmire's on our guest line. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. And, man, your career, not only on the stage, but also in the studio, is really amazing. You're all over the place. And one thing a lot of people may not realize, or they may, if they remember back to some of the In Touch television shows or television broadcasts with Dr. Charles Stanley, you, and correct me here if I'm wrong, but you at one time were on the intro. I think they even shot video of you playing there at First Baptist Atlanta for the television broadcasts. And are you still on doing anything with In Touch at this point?
Well, not for their television shows. Just having grown up in the Atlanta area, I had friends from high school that went to First Baptist Atlanta, and I just respected his ministry from way back when. And Dr. Stanley would come and speak at a few things at my church, and so I've been around the Stanley family for a while. And then, interestingly enough, one of the guys that worked in touch department, in the media department, worked at the media department at my church. So once he got over to In Touch, he would call me in to do some studio type things, to play behind this and to play for this introduction. So that's how that relationship started. And I think I was still with the Neelands actually when we were doing some of the Templeton Tours cruises back in the early 90s, where Dr. Stanley was one of the host pastors. So that's how that relationship, I guess, began. We were just around each other for many years, and he's been very gracious and also encouraging, and it's kind of the combination of Maurice Templeton and Jeff Templeton, their invitation for me to be a part of those cruises, and then, of course, Dr. Stanley has to approve. So it's the combination of that relationship going back many, many years that I'm still doing those today. So it's mainly just the cruises. And occasionally Dr. Stanley will go out and do what he calls rallies, which would be like one-night revivals in different cities. He hasn't done those in a few years, but a few years back I was a part of those. So that's just always a lot of fun, a great honor.
With the television intro on In Touch and that thought process, just by way of trivia, have you done any other interesting bits of work, maybe for commercials or anything in other industries?
No, I know a lot of people, or not a lot, a few times people have told me that they've used my CDs for, like in the background music for commercials or whatever. And one thing, again, where God's got a much bigger plan than we ever realized, I've recorded solo piano albums for Spring Hill Music Group since its inception. It first was called Chapel Music, and I think the company was founded in 94, and I've had a relationship with them now for 15 years, and I hope it lasts for much longer. But they have a different division. Spring Hill Music Group has another division called Green Hill Productions that just they just record nice, easy listening types of all music, and that music goes into all different kinds of stores, gift shops, card shops, antique stores, any specialty shops that wants to be unique and carry just a nice background kind of music, people to put on in their homes to when they have guests over to have dinner, or a lot of people that I've had teachers tell me they use my CDs to when their kids are studying, but a lot of those CDs would be like Broadway songs or love songs or just old pop songs like Somewhere Over the Rainbow and stuff like that.
Right.
So that when my piano teacher was teaching me all these different types of music, I never knew that to this day I'm still getting to play all the different kinds of music, and it goes into different circles, And I have to trust a lot of times someone will order a CD off of my website, and it'll just be a Broadway CD or a love song CD. And, of course, I don't know the names that I'm seeing. I'm wondering, where did this person, in sometimes another country, where did this person, hear about my music? And you don't know if they're a Christian. And you just pray, and I do, and God's big enough certainly to accomplish this. If they like what they hear, even if it was a love song CD, if they go to my website, my biography is on there. It tells about all the stuff I'm involved with. I don't hide the fact that I'm a Christian. And there's all these different kinds of CDs on there, hymns and praise and worship. So even, who knows? God can use that love song CD to get them interested in Christian music. And then, it's up to God to do the rest. But it's just great to be able to record and play different, all different kinds of music for a Christian company.
Well, I have to tell that you played for my wedding, and with a broken foot,
with
I think it was.
Broken ankle, yes.
Broken ankle. But that didn't affect your playing, although it was your damper pedal foot, I believe.
No, it was my soft pedal foot. So if I was really loud at your wedding, it's because my left foot had a cast on it.
Gotcha. Well, what was interesting is I was a fan of your. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and being in the Atlanta area and getting married there, I thought, well, why not? Let's just see if he's available, and it worked out. And then for our honeymoon, we went to Bar Harbor, Maine, and you know, of course, in the main part of Bar Harbor, very touristy. And going to all the gift shops, walk into a Christmas shop, and I kid you not, walk right up to the counter to pay for our lobster claw Christmas ornament as a keepsake for our honeymoon, and what's there on the counter? Stan Whitmire piano CD for sale.
That's neat. I love hearing stories like that, because I've grown up in Atlanta, I still live in Atlanta, so I know a lot about the stores around here where I might see, you know, my CDs, but it's great to know that they are other places. That's wonderful.
Exactly. Well, the variety is there. At the heart of it, though, is sacred music. And, of course, the Old Time Gospel Project is something that listeners of Southern Gospel and Convention Style music, they're going to love to have that in their collection. And
Old Time Gospel Piano.
Old Time Gospel Piano. You know what? I have sold a lot of copies of that for you. I just want you to know.
Thank you, Daniel. Your commission check will be in the mail.
Yes, thanks. Listen, you have a new project. Speaking of the Gaithers, you did this. You've done this several times, and it's an amazing piece of art. I mean, you got pianists who are out there who record single tracks, you know, one song, then a second song, then a third song, and there's an obvious pause. You know, each song is its own. But you have put together several of these. You kind of call them background music or just continuous play, where you go from track 1 to track 20 and there's no break in the pianist. It's basically, in piano work, it's basically one long medley. And this latest one is exactly like that.
Yeah, this is actually only the second one I've done that way. So there's just two of them. But the first one I did was about 12 years ago. That was just a series of praise and worship courses, just very relaxing and peaceful. And I always, before that time, I'd always wanted to do a project with no breaks between the songs, because that's what I had done so often at church, either playing prelude music while people entered before a worship service, or at a wedding. Many times people wanted, you know, 30 minutes of music before the wedding, or even for a funeral service or a memorial service. So that I just enjoyed doing that so much, sitting there and modulating and going to the next song. So I thought, how great would it be to do a CD that way? So Piano Praise and Worship, that came out, I believe, in 1997, was the first one I did that way. Bill Gaither called me about a year and a half ago, and he had actually attended a funeral service in Indiana where a pastor came up to him afterwards and said, we really have a need for a CD like what this one hopefully will become. He said, I would love to hear a CD of, you know, Bill and Gloria Gaither songs that are encouraging, and they weren't loud one song and soft one song the next, and one song fast and one song with singing. He asked Bill, he said, the pastor did, said, could you do something like that? So Bill called me and felt very kind of intimidated, I guess, when the godfather of Christian music, so to speak, he and Gloria have written so many songs, which I believe will be around for generations to come. I mean, when you're in the hymnal, I think that's pretty, you know,
staying power.
Pretty much. But Bill wanted that. He asked me if I could come up with that concept. And the idea was to create a project that would be encouraging to anyone who was going through hard times, be it, you know, whatever, stress, sickness of a friend, their own sickness, the loss of a loved one, anything like that. And so we called the project Joy Comes in the Morning, 20 songs of comfort and peace. And the challenge comes when you're doing one of these projects with no breaks. You don't have the luxury of figuring out the order of the songs after you've recorded them. Normally, right, when you go into the studio and there's breaks in you know, after each song, you just record them however you feel like it at the time, and then when you get home afterwards, you decide what the sequence is going to be. Well, this has to tell a story, and you have to decide You know, a lot of things go into that. What are the lyrics of the song saying? What key is the song in? What's the feel of the song? So it very, I thank you for saying that it's like an artist painting a painting, because I was very pleased with how it turned out. And the greatest, up until this point, it is not even released yet, but up until this point, the greatest compliment I've gotten is from Bill and Gloria themselves, Bill is such a humble man. For those people that have never gotten a chance to talk to him, he just said, first of all, he said, you've made this 73-year-old man very happy. And he said, you've made my melodies sound better than I think they are, which I don't think that's true, but it's very gracious for him to say that. And I hope that it ministers to a lot of people.
Well, in this modern age of technology, and and Bill knows, you can go into a studio and fix anything. But this speaks volumes, because you go from track one all the way through the 20th song on here, and at least in my ear, I mean, it's just piano, and so I don't hear any opportunity to go back and fix a note or fix a timing issue.
Daniel, you know that can still be done. I'm not. I don't want you to say. I mean, nobody's perfect, and it's the same principle of recording this as when you record a song with traditional breaks. You just never put an ending on anything. You still play until you make your mistake, and then you stop there. You go back and fix it. And you just kind of, you know, splice, start over. So you just keep on going. Sure. You just never end it until it's, you know, you have one beginning. I take 2 days to record a project normally. And so it is a strange concept in your mind to think you walk into the studio at 10 a.m. on one day, you begin playing, and technically the song is not over until the next day at about 6 p.m. So, it was fun to record. It certainly brought back a lot of memories. You don't think about really the impact that the Gaithers have had on Christian music until you sit down and you play songs like Jesus, There's Something About That Name, and The Longer I Serve Him, and Something Beautiful, and I Will Serve Thee. I mean, it's just all these memories flooded back of when our pastor would sing these songs when I was first playing at my church, you know, when I was 15, 16 years old. So.
Well, cue the music. It's Stan Whitmire, and the way we end all the programs, here's that familiar sound. And by the way, if people want this, it will be available, I'm sure, at the Gaither website and store, gaither.com, but also at your site, stanwhitmire.com.
stanwhitmire.com, and the Spring Hill Music Group tells me that it's supposed to release on July 28th. So for those people that are on my email list, and for the people that haven't visited the website, I encourage you to go there and add your email address to the list when the CD comes out. If it happens to be before July 28th, y'all will be the first ones to find out. I'll send out a little notification.
Great. Hey, Stan, thanks for taking time today. It's been good to catch up with you.
Daniel, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate what you do so much. You're one of the top, one of the best that I know, seriously.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.